Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
Let's take a long walk north of the wall after dark.
Do not do that. Nothing good ever happens on the north side of the wall in Game of Thrones, Jill Scott. We'll recap the penultimate episode of the penultimate season on this episode.
Plus, there's mixed reaction to the new Defenders series. Sean gives his spoiler-free review and reacts to my big sell from last week right now on Inside Pop. Hey, y'all. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. And this is Inside Pop. It's your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture.
Of course, as we have done for the last few weeks, another incredibly epic Game of Thrones episode aired on Sunday, season 7, episode 6, called Beyond the Wall. We went way beyond that wall, y'all.
And we were expecting it to be beyond because that's the gayest thing I'll say all episode. But we were expecting it to be beyond because it is the penultimate episode. And if we've learned anything from history, and the North does remember, the second to last episode is always both lit and crunked and fire.
Ooh, good trio of descriptive words for crazy.
So let's...
It's turnt.
So let's say, A, there will be spoilers, and... But you've all seen it already, so let's not even worry about that. Mita, let's get into it. Let's talk about those foolhardy men who decided to journey beyond the wall and, you know, basically go through the tundra and capture a White Walker to bring back to Cersei to prove that White Walkers do in fact exist and they all need to band together instead of fighting each other. You know what? Basically, I'm so team Jon Snow that when he said that last episode, I thought, hey, that's actually the best plan that could exist. But during the first half of this episode, Amita, my thoughts were such a bad idea. Not smart at all. Foolhardy.
Tom Hardy or foolhardy?
You know which one I choose.
Yeah, I think that Jon Snow... Be still my heart, Jon Snow. I think his intentions were on the right path. But when you're surrounded on this small rock in the middle of a pond and there's a circle of White Walkers around you, maybe not the best idea.
So I remember in the first 20 minutes of this episode, when you could, I mean, I knew exactly what the writers were doing. Let's make sure that we get to know every single one of the Fellowship of the Ring. Wrong franchise. Fellowship of the wall. Let's make sure. And, you know, so every time someone made a joke, Gendry got teased. Someone declared their love for Brienne of Tarth. So yes. Basically, I mean, it was such great writing because every single... They made you feel and not want anyone to die, although you knew that some people were not going to make it. So I thought that was great, just letting us spend some time with them. And then I'll say this maybe two more times. If this had been two seasons ago, I think the journey to find a White Walker would have lasted multiple episodes, but no time to waste. So I'm going to say that felt a little rushed to me, kind of reminding you to care and to get to know and to see the interactions of all of the band of merry men. Again, wrong franchise. I felt like that felt a little rushed.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, complaint online about the rushingness of this episode, specifically with Gendry. They're like, go back, get the raven. And he runs all the way back and almost dies right in front of the door and then says, raven. And somehow in that time, first of all, he runs real fast. Then they get that raven. That raven has to fly to Dragonstone to alert the dragons.
And then, of course, Daenerys has to have a really beautiful white thermal outfit prepared for her because she's going north. You have to wear white.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she has to fly there. And how does she know how to get there? You know what? You know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to start picking holes in the plot. Let's just enjoy it. But there were a couple of holes. There were a couple.
It's just, you know, every time I see the holes or I feel it, I'm like, damn you, Game of Thrones, for being too expensive to make.
So I know you want to get to it. So, but she did find them. And she brought all three of her dragons because I think she knew that all three would be needed. But sadly, only two returned.
Okay. That was so tense. I definitely yelped when that head White Walker threw that spear. That head White Walker gives me nightmares, y'all. And I was like, oh my God. And then pouring out blood. I was like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen on this show thus far.
This show, so far, I would say almost every, there was one very, very, very talky episode, which I don't need to revisit, but almost every other episode of this season begs you to rewatch it because it's just, the action is great. The polar bear attack was, I feel like, designed to be rewatched because it was just, you know, it was snowing and it was white and the polar bear is white and you can almost see. And yeah, so very, very well directed and exciting and action packed. I mean, you could tell that this costs lots of money to make.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Back at Winterfell, though, I'm sure if you all listened last week, Sean was like, I would hope that maybe the Stark sisters have a discussion about that scroll that Arya found. And they did. They heard you.
Yeah, but it didn't really go the way I wanted it to.
I don't think anybody thought it would go that way.
Amita, may I share something with you and the listeners?
Yes, please.
I don't ask for much. All I wanted was for Sansa and Arya to kind of be like the Knoll sisters of Westeros. Let me explain.
No, Sansa. You don't need to. I get it.
Okay, Sansa, she's had some troubled marriages, like Beyonce. But she runs the world now, like Beyonce.
I mean, Sansa's had a couple more marriages than Beyonce, but okay, I get you. I feel you.
Arya, kind of different, kind of the outsider, like Solange. They really could be but unlike the Knoll sisters, they don't get along and they don't support each other. They are attacking each other more like whatever happened to Baby Jane's sisters. I don't know. I need like sisters who fight. Yeah, they're like Blanche and Baby Jane Hudson. They're like they're those two sisters.
There you go.
I want them to be the Knoll sisters.
They should be. They should support each other. They would be a powerhouse together, but they've each gone through a lot of stuff. Well, Shiznyi, that unfortunately has made it difficult for them to see eye to eye here.
God. Wait, Arya is totally Solange, not as popular as Sansa.
Yes.
Also, don't touch her hair. You'll get... All right, I'm done.
All right. Sorry. You sure you're done? Any more Knowles references?
Did I mention that Sansa runs the world? All right, I'm done.
Well, I would actually beg to differ. I think maybe Daenerys runs the world right now. Segway, Dany. Shipping Jon. Looks like they're doing it like everybody's hoping they would.
I really hope the writers surprise us. I hope that the writers know that we know and want these two together. I wonder if they're going to say, surprise, we're doing something different. And look, you're even more satisfied than you thought you would be.
Let's hope.
Yeah. All right. I think it's time for me to say this. And I really would love listeners. Actually, I need listeners to tweet and tell me what they think. And of course, Amit, I want to know what you think. I'm not sure who's worthy of sitting on the Iron Throne. I love, love, love Jon Snow. I would bend the knee for him, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
I don't think he should be on the Iron Throne. I think he's a little bit too foolhardy. I think he's more about kind of doing things himself and going on adventures. I think he would be bored on the Iron Throne. I think Daenerys has too much of that Targaryen madness in her. She's so proud. Why does she actually want to be queen? You know, I don't know. Who do you think should be on the Iron Throne? It's time to talk about this because it is the penultimate episode of the second to last season.
I feel similarly to you. You know, I think Jon Snow has the right instincts and the right demeanor and maturity to be the king. But when you think of him with a crown on his head and doing and sitting on that throne and making those decisions, you're like, that's just not him.
He doesn't want that. No,
you don't want that. Right. And then when you go to Daenerys, like you said, she's got that mad Targaryen in her. She's ruthless. And you also don't want that in a queen, because then it's just off with your head with everybody.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry. Really, let me clarify. Not off with your head. Let me burn your head.
Right. Exactly. And then it shall be off. Yeah, I think that the writers may not go the easy route, which is, John and Dany sit on the throne together. It's going to be something else. What that is, I will leave it to more creative minds than mine to figure out.
I've got it. Guys, here we go. You know, they're out of the books. They could do what they want with Blessings of George R.R. Martin. I'm thinking next season they do a fast forward of a couple years and maybe like 10. Who knows? John and Dany have a baby that was never meant to be conceived because Dany can't have kids, but they do. And that baby gets the throne.
But who's
saying, why not?
Who's on the throne between then? John and Dany.
Yeah.
And they're both like, we're on the throne, but better things will come along. All right.
Let's go with that, guys. Okay. Just put it out in the atmosphere. Make it happen.
Or Tyrion. I feel like it might be Tyrion. He might end up on the throne. And actually, out of everyone, he is the most reasonable. He is the most intelligent.
Logical.
Savvy. And I think he actually cares about the people. He knows what it's like to be an outsider, to not be treated like royalty.
Yeah.
Tyrion might end up on the throne somehow. All right,
I would enjoy that. I would actually enjoy that.
Me too. So much speculation on our parts. But to get to the meat of this episode, how would you compare? I know it's not a contest, but let's face it. For you and I, it's always a contest. We're always. Yeah. how would you compare this penultimate episode with last season's penultimate episode?
Oh, Battle of the Bastards has a special place in my heart. I think Battle of the Bastards still, you know what it is? That battlefield, Rickon, Bolton's, you know, everything that was involved in that slow-mo crazy shot scene, it had so much emotion into it. This episode, they're just fighting zombies off and trying to survive. So I feel like the emotion was not as much in this episode. So I think I still prefer Battle of the Bastards. But if there was anything for extra credit this episode did, it is the elephant that we're not discussing right now. Scratch that. Not elephant. A zombie dragon.
Yeah, a dragon. What is it? How do you pronounce that word? White? It's a white dragon. W-I-G-H-T. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's going to be. And it may not even pay off next episode. I think they're saving that for the final season. I don't think we're going to see. Oh, let me try to redeem myself. This is based on just research I did on the internet. When you quizzed me, I could not name all three dragons last week.
Yes.
Because I couldn't name Drogon, whose name sounds like dragon. Thanks, yes. Alanoa. I did do the research because I wanted to know which dragon died. And so
based on
my research, Viserion died.
Ooh.
Which is actually meaningful because he was named after Dany's brother, who was also killed on screen. So there's that little comparison. They're also saying that it's likely that John is going to ride Rhaegal because Rhaegal is named after Rhaegar, who is John's father. So there might be that connection there.
Wow.
That's not me. That's the internet speaking. So, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, Battle of the Bastards, I think, is going to go down. It just as the suitcase from Mad Men is always thought of as one of the greatest Mad Men episodes, and Ozymandias is always thought about one of is always thought of as one of the great Breaking Bad episodes. Mm-hmm. I think no matter what they do for the next 7 episodes, Battle of the Bastards will always be considered one of the great Game of Thrones episodes.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think this one's great as well in its own way. But yeah, can't wait for next week. It's going to be awesome. Can't wait.
We'll see you this time. Same dragon time, same dragon channel.
If you guys have any thoughts on this episode, definitely tweet us at Pop Insiders. Let us know if you agree with, you know, my theory of the 10 years forward for next season. If you agree that, well, you know, maybe Tyrion should be on the throne, or who you think your pick is. Let us know. Tweet us. We'd love to hear from you.
At Pop Insiders. All right, we'll be right back with a review of The Defenders after this very short message.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek? Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too.
Butts, 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 butts.
No. Will you change your mind? Far too many times.
Over and over again. Over and over again. Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel.
Next up, we are going to discuss the highly anticipated. I was going to put a question mark after the end of that word, highly. Let's call it highly anticipated Netflix series, Marvel's The Defenders. It premiered this past Friday on Netflix. All episodes were available for streaming. And Amita and I have talked about this a few times because we looked at the trailer and talked about whether the trailer succeeded in its mission to get people excited. And the big deal that everyone's talked about for the past 6 months is that after 3 series that were really well liked by fans, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage, Iron Fist came on and it was a dud. There isn't anyone I've ever met or read or heard from who actually loved Iron Fist. Most people tolerated it. So the question is, how is The Defenders? Is it the sum of its parts? Is it more than the sum of its parts? So, Amita, you know me. I don't binge. I neither have time for binging, nor is it really the way I want to consume pop culture. So anyway, all that to say that I only watched the first episode of the Defenders. So what I'm going to talk about is really just it's a spoiler-free review.
All right. Question number one. What did you think? I think there's only one question.
Ooh, that's a tough question. No, I actually liked it. For me, the most interesting thing about the first episode is that the aforementioned series, Luke Cage, as we know, we've met and spoken to the showrunner of Luke Cage, and all of the 3 showrunners, I'm not talking about Iron Fist now, but the showrunners of Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, they all came with a lot of creativity and gave each of those characters and each of those series a real distinctive aesthetic. Right, like even from the color palette that they used, the way the words were spoken, the dialogue written, even though they would all eventually have to exist in the same universe, they were all very, very, very specific. And one of the things I loved about the first episode is that each of the 4 defenders basically got an equal amount of screen time, and the aesthetic from their original series was intact. So Luke Cage felt like the Luke Cage series. And when you saw Jessica Jones, you felt like you were in the Jessica Jones series, ditto Daredevil. And so here's the one little bit of a spoiler. They don't meet up yet in the first episode. So right now it is really about the four separate plot lines of these characters. And I actually thought that was interesting. I'm glad they're taking the time to let the individual plots of these characters play out before they team up and start probably fighting each other and then uniting and fighting the big bad.
That's interesting to me. I like that they're not just all in one place at the very beginning of the series.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I have a question for you, because I think there really are mixed reviews. Some people have called it sluggish. Some people have called it well done and worth it and a nice slow burn. I know that you're not chomping at the bit. You said you were probably going to watch Jessica Jones first. But I don't know. The one thing that I really want to talk about more than the Defenders is how hard it is to sustain the quality of a franchise, right? Like, I was trying to think of an example of, like, they didn't do it with Star Wars, right? People hate those middle three movies.
Yeah.
Right? The only example I could think of is Harry Potter, where every single one of those books J.K. Rowling did was well-reviewed by fans and the New York Times and other book critics. And then every single one of those movies, for the most part, got better and better and better. Fans were never disappointed. I just think that, and I've never read the books, but I think J.K. Rowling did something phenomenal, because I feel like there are so many examples of franchises faltering and maybe coming back a little bit. And I don't know, are there any things that you followed for a really long time that have sustained quality like that?
You know what does? You know what has? It's the obvious choice. Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it really has captivated a nation, a world, literally, and also has gotten better and better. And like, we've all sit here obsessed with it, you know, like, yeah. Appointment TV doesn't exist as much anymore because of binge watching and Netflix and Hulu and streaming services and on-demand services and, you know, things like that. People are cord cutting and just watching a la carte. But with Game of Thrones, everybody needs to watch it. You need to watch it on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think that even like The Walking Dead, there's, you know, I think it's season 2 or 3 where they just call it the farm season that was really bad and kind of boring. And Friday Night Lights has that second season that is notoriously bad. It's tough. I mean, there's so many moving parts. And so the fact that Iron Fist was kind of lackluster and Defenders is getting mixed reviews, no matter how good Jessica Jones and Luke Cage are, it's not surprising. I think they're just not doing what is an anomaly, which is sustaining something consistently and making it better and better. I mean, how great would it have been if Daredevil was good, Jessica Jones was even better, Luke Cage was even better, and then Iron Fist was even better, and then Defenders was more than the sum of its parts? That's what they wanted, but I don't think it happened.
I'd like to say the jury is out and maybe you should give it a couple more episodes, but that's just the optimist in me that, you know, sometimes things start off a little slow and then they pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely all in, and I'm definitely going to watch some more. And the one thing I am going to say to you, so there is one little spoiler.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
It's really to get you to watch. Ladies and gentlemen, I say this, skip ahead 45 seconds if you don't want to hear one thing that happens in the Defenders episode 1. But I'm telling you now this, Amita, in 3, 2, 1, Luke Cage, Claire Temple, sex scene on a table.
I'm in. Yep. You know me so well, don't you?
I wanted to say, okay, Welcome back if you skipped ahead.
I mean, it was bound to happen if anybody watched Luke Cage. Get it. You get it, girl.
They got their coffee in the afternoon. All right. Well, that's all I really wanted to say about the Defenders. Thank you for indulging me.
Of course. We will have the big sell after this short message.
Mugs, shirts, stickers, patches, tanks, and more are yours for the purchasing at MaxFunStore.com. Hey, you already love the podcasts, so why not take this to the next level and outfit your home and bod with our merch? MaxFunStore.com. Because if you have to wear a shirt, it should be one of ours.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. And now it's time for The Big Sell. It's our favorite segment in which Amita and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture we want the other one to try. It's like, say, I'm Tyrion, the hand of Daenerys, and I'm trying to convince her to try some pop culture. That's exactly what The Big Sell's like.
The analogies never end with Game of Thrones, guys. Never end.
So last week, Amita was kind enough to share a big sell with me. And that big sell was...
the song Castles by the artist Bosco featuring Saint Beauty.
Yes. And sometimes both Amita and I just give a big old softball of a big sell because we know that the other one, there's no way that they're not going to like it. Right.
Yep.
So I love this song. I had never heard of Bosco before. Bosco who? That's what I said when I went on Spotify to listen to the song.
True.
Saint Beauty. I love them. And listen, everything in good time, but I really, really, really need at least an EP from Saint Beauty, please.
Yes. Put it in the atmosphere, please. Wonderland, get on it.
Saint Beauty on the Wonderland label, which, of course, was founded and directed by Janelle Monáe. But they've got this great, ethereal, cool, chill, laid-back sound, beautiful harmonies and melodies. So they're great. And then, so they meshed, in my opinion, so well with Bosco. And, kind of a perfect combination. There were times, actually, where I couldn't tell who was who, and that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, the vibe of the song was so cool, and that it just grabbed me because I think I said in last week's episode, it was the very first track song that played at the very top of the premiere of season 2 of Queen Sugar. And I was like, what is this song?
And so this is my question for you, because it's a category of R&B song that I like a lot, which is, you know, there's like the song, like that category of songs where women sing and they talk about being heartbroken. But this song falls into the category of you messed up, I'm okay, your loss, my gain. Like Beyonce, sorry, like that category. So I'm wondering what part of Queen Sugar it played over.
Oh, so it's like I said, it's the opening scene of season 2 premiere when Nova is folding handmade cloth and a man exits her home behind her and she looks at him.
Okay.
And he looks at her and she's kind of like, yeah, I did that again. And then
who's that white man in Nova's yard? That's
yes. Yeah.
Okay.
That's when
I miss that cop.
No, it wasn't the cop. It was a replacement cop.
I know. It was like white man who's not the cop.
Yes. Right? Yes. I do miss that cop, though. He was hot.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand Nova had to move on. I get it. And listen, she's doing even better, in my opinion. So that's great. But thank you so much. I'm going to give Bosco featuring Saint Beauty. I'm really deciding this at the moment because this is what I'm going to say. I loved the song. I actually loved it so much that I went and listened to the whole album. And I loved even more songs on the album, even more than I loved Castles. So,
oh my God.
Why don't we say 3.75?
Wow. Wow.
Because it was a gateway. It was wonderful. And then it brought me into even more wonders. So
exactly.
3.75 to Bosco featuring Saint Beauty, Castles.
Yay. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I think that's what the beauty of this big sell segment is especially when one of us gives a single you know, or, you know, or a handful of singles of an artist, it sparks either one of us to kind of explore further. That's the best part of this, because then we just kind of learn more about this artist and we get to know them and we get to learn more of their repertoire. And, you know, it's awesome. So I'm really glad that you enjoy Bosco and Castles and more Bosco.
Yeah, thank you. Especially, it feels like there aren't a lot of new releases that I'm either discovering or connecting to. So really appreciate you bringing some new music that I love into my life. Thanks.
Anytime. I have to thank Queen Sugar, really, which I can never thank enough. All right. Well, what do you have for this week for me?
All right. Well, I have something a little bit different for you this week. We haven't really talked at all about the current horrific situation that's going on in our government at all on our podcast, maybe partly because we just want this podcast to be a nice escape for our listeners. You know what? Take 45 minutes and don't deal with the fact that we have a dangerous imbecile in the White House. But I guess what I'd like to say is that it seems like in the past couple of weeks, more than just being an imbecile, our president seems to have also become an outspoken opponent of racial justice. And that's even surprising. I don't know. Why am I surprised?
I'm not surprised, sadly.
But the fact that he wouldn't be savvy enough to hide it. Anyway, I don't even want to. Yeah, like I haven't, and I will not say his name. I'll try not to. But anyway, to try to be a little bit more positive, one thing that gave that inspired me was the fact that he has, or since Reagan started it, there's been something called the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities. And so from Reagan on, there was, you know, a collective of really smart, artistic people who would advise presidential policy to uplift the arts, direct some money to different art programs, because the arts are important. They're vital. And so when Trump was elected, a lot of people who were on the Committee on the Arts and Humanities quit because they're like, sorry, can't do it. But a number of people stayed on, and they thought, even though we don't believe in anything Trump has to offer, we are going to stay on this committee and try to do our best with this administration. But now, all 16 remaining members of the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities decided to resign. Of course, because of the way this administration has been handling the events going on in Virginia.
Okay, I'm just going to stop right there. If that's your big sell, 4 stars.
But I haven't told you what my big sell is yet. So anyway, so what's been inspiring to me, because I don't want to just be like soapbox guy, but there are some people we love on this committee. The artist Chuck Close, who we've never really spoken about or whatever, but Cal Penn is on this committee. Yes. He was appointed by Obama. Remember him? And Jhumpa Lahiri.
Oh.
So, and then a lot of other very talented people. So what my big sell to you is basically the letter that they wrote to President Trump explaining why they had no other choice but to resign in protest of what he was doing and not doing. And I just found the letter inspiring and direct and brave. And I think a lot of times people are like, don't let celebrities tell you what to do. Just let them act. But I'm big selling you this letter because I think the celebrities, artists, you know, did and made a statement in a way that most of us can't, but they used their notoriety for something good.
Yeah, this is so funny. I wasn't as in touch with social media this weekend, and I saw, you know, I just get Twitter updates on my phone sometimes. And when somebody that I'm following and like 16 other people retweet something, and a lot of that was happening after Charlottesville, you know, Ava DuVernay, who I follow, and Michelle Obama and Barack Obama and all these different huge people on Twitter would retweet things. And it would be like Ava DuVernay and 8 other people retweeted Cal Penn or something. And I was like, well, what's this? And I opened it, but I didn't have time to read it. And so I heard like somebody had wrote something like, good job, this is amazing, Calvin, or whatever. I was like, good job. Good job, bro. My Indian brother from another mother. Awesome. Good for you. I'm going to read this at some point. So thank you.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It's some point now.
good. Oh, I'm glad. Yeah. Cause I do this all the time. I see a headline and I'm like, oh, I need to read that entire article. But
right.
Yeah, it's inspiring. It's not super long, but it's just every word is chosen well. And I love what they say. And I love Cal Penn. Andrew Bilahiri, I want to have a dinner party where both Cal Penn, Andrew Bilahiri, and Amita Patel are in attendance.
Oh, you know, June Bilahiri is part of our pop culture history. Those who may not know.
Hey, that's true. That's true.
True small short story, almost more than 10 years ago. Oh, good Lord. 11, 12 years ago-ish, Sean and I were both working at the same company, but not on the same project. Truth be told, I always wanted to work with Sean, but he never let me work with him.
Okay, there's another story behind that. But we were not friends.
We weren't friends like this, but everybody in the office knew everybody. Everybody was friendly with each other.
Even me.
Even you. And at some point, maybe in an elevator in a hallway, we started talking about something and it came up that Sean was reading June Bilahiri's The Namesake. And I was like, oh, I've been dying to read it because I loved her short stories, The Interpretive Melodies. And he said, I have it. I'll loan it to you. So he gave me the hardcover of The Namesake. I never read it, but I kept it for years. Because I think shortly after that, I left the company, but you stayed there and we just weren't in touch for a few years. And I think the movie was made starring Cal Penn. And I think I just didn't read the book. I just kept it because it was very pretty on my bookshelf and saw the movie and I knew what happened.
All I need to know is that the conversation didn't go down like this. Hey, Amita, you're Indian. I'm reading a book about Indians now. Let's talk about it.
I'm afraid the more that you say that, the more that might be the memory that's coming back into my head. Just okay, kidding. No, I have no idea. I really don't know, but I know I kept that book for a while. Yeah. And then 5 years ago, we ended up working together and I gave it back to you, right?
Happy ending.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been a happier ending. And now here's a little button on it. Cal Penn and June Bilahiri united together. And I feel united with them and you.
Oh, we really need to get that dinner party on the books.
I know, really.
They're part of our history.
She lives in Brooklyn. I actually know what block she lives on, but that's a whole other story.
And now he's a stalker.
I am.
All right. Well, that's a good way to end this. So Sean doesn't sound more like a stalker. Thank you all for listening this week. Stay in touch with us, as always, on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. And of course, head over to InsidePopPodcast.com to find out more about us and subscribe to our podcast.
And now you can also find us on MaximumFun.org. It's a great podcast network, listener supported, artist owned, and we are alongside a group of great podcasts dedicated to comedy and culture.
Next week, no surprise, we are recapping the finale of Game of Thrones.
Swords, swords, dragons and swords.
Brienne of Tarth. I don't know.
It's giddy. We're beside ourselves and we hope you are too. Yeah, we'll totally recap that. We'll totally recap the mess out of that episode.
Yes. And we'll get a little review of Afropunk from Sean, who will be attending this coming weekend. So I can't wait to hear about all the artists that you discover and the ones that you love seeing at that awesome festival.
Sean Johnson reporting live from Afropunk next week.
Have a great week, y'all.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.